On this episode of Newt's World, we're going to talk about some of the most interesting things being done at any state level in the country. And I'm totally intrigued with what's been happening in New York State. And I'm really delighted to welcome my guest, Leader Rob Ort. He's the minority leader from the New York State Senate. And he's going to share with us what's happening in New York, and in particular, how the budget that just passed and some of the truly amazing things that are in it, which is why I was so eager to get Rob to talk with us. He represents the 62nd District, and he really understands the stuff. First of all, let me just say thank you for being involved and for being willing to talk with us today.
Mr. Speaker, thank you for having me. Great to hear from you.
Well, it's all fascinating, as you know. So I want to start with the budget process, which, as I understand it, was essentially secret. That is, the Democrats got together, closed the door, and negotiated among themselves. How was it negotiated?
The budget here in New York has always been lacking in transparency. It's never been a very transparent process in my time here. But this year was particularly, I think, egregious and secret. You know, with COVID, the governor has locked the Capitol down, so no one is able to get in or out as far as lobbyists, government affairs folks, you know, citizens. Normally this place is teeming with folks. None of that was the case. Even reporters, you know, were sort of limited on access to elected officials. So there was not a lot of transparency surrounding this year's budget process. And of course, they used COVID as sort of the guise for that. Then you throw in the governor's multiple scandals, right? The governor's multiple investigations. And as you probably are aware, and your listeners, he has been having a lot of press conferences recently without the press. And so they all got together, the Senate Majority Leader, a Democrat, the Speaker of the Assembly, a Democrat, and the governor and their staffs, presumably, and negotiated not only one of the most secretive budgets, but one of the worst budgets in the history of the state of New York, increases spending more than 10%, raises taxes $4.3 billion. And that's on top of the $12.6 billion that the federal government and the president gave to us. We're spending twice as much on undocumented non-US citizens than we are spending on small business relief in the middle of one of the worst economic downturns and lockdowns and the pandemic. We're spending twice as much on non-US citizens than we are small business. We're spending four times as much on non-US citizens that we're spending on property tax relief for hardworking middle-income New Yorkers. And we're spending 400 times as much on non-US citizens than we're spending on mental health for our veterans. Just to put that in perspective, that was the priority in this budget. Raising taxes, giving out benefits for illegal immigrants and non-US citizens and those who were here illegally. They actually wanted to include felons in there as well, but I guess that was a bridge too far. But very little for small business, very little for mental health services in the middle of a pandemic when we know suicides and that are up. And I could go on and on.
But explain something to me as an outsider. What drives a political party to want to give thousands and thousands of dollars, as I understand it, up to $15,600.
Correct.
To people who are illegally here? I mean, what's the underlying drive for that?
You know, the underlying drive, at least from my perspective, and having been here for a couple years, is there are many members of the Democratic majority who really want to confer citizenship status on these folks, right? They're in their communities. They believe they're their voters. This is a political voting block that they see for them, okay? But as you know, the conferring of citizenship is the exclusive right of the federal government. New York State can't do that. So what do we do? Well, we do other things that sort of confer de facto citizenship. We granted driver's licenses and identification to those who are here illegally a couple years ago. We now granted unemployment benefits to those who are here illegally. It has been talked about conferring voting rights in state elections to those who are here illegally. So the idea is if you confer every other sort of de facto right to folks who would otherwise not get these things because they're not here legally, you're granting what I would call de facto citizenship, at least at a state level. And of course, you're going to have more people who are here illegally who want to come to New York because you can get benefits that you otherwise would not be eligible for. Meanwhile, we do nothing for hardworking, tax-paying, law-abiding citizens. We are far more concerned with those who have broken the law, whether illegally coming to the country, whether committing a crime. We are far more concerned with that group of folks than we are with people who've played by the rules and who are trying to carve out a living here in the state of New York.
As I understand it, if you get the $15,600 or the smaller $3,200 as an illegal immigrant, when you register to get that, do you actually also automatically get registered to vote?
Under the law, there is language that, you know, supposedly prevents them from registering to vote, at least under this piece of legislation. The driver's license legislation, which was passed a couple of years ago, we in New York State have a motor voter law, right? When you get your license for the first time, you are presented the opportunity to also register to vote. And it's really incumbent upon the person, sort of the honor system, as to, you know, if they're not a citizen, quote unquote, they're not allowed to vote. But the way the law was written, the burden of proof is not only on the state to prove that, but also the assumption would be it was an accident, unless you could prove that there was like malice or something or what have you. So it's clear what they're trying to do. They're happy that New York State leads the nation in out-migration because the people who are leaving probably aren't voting Democrat. The people who are leaving aren't the folks that they want. And I think they're banking on at some point these folks either having state voting rights or maybe getting amnesty, and they'll have this swath of voters, you know, sort of at the ready. And this is all about cementing control, not only in New York City, but around the state. And really what's happening to me in New York State, Mr. Speaker, is a crime. I mean, when you think about we're letting out violent offenders, no bail, and we're talking about further restrictions to disarm the law-abiding populace who would defend themselves from these folks. You know, we're talking about unemployment. The federal government recently granted the first 10,200 that somebody got in unemployment benefits last year would not be considered taxable income, federal taxes. The state of New York did not go along with that. We don't want to miss out on that taxable income, obviously. So for this party that's supposedly be a party of the working person, of the, you know, middle class or working class, only if you're not a citizen of the country, apparently. If you're a working class person, if you own a gun, if you care about hunting and your Second Amendment rights, if you're trying to scrape a living here as a business person, even if you're a single mother or parent of a family, there's really very little for you in this budget.
So it's almost like if you do everything that's right to grow a better state, the legislature runs over you. And if you're doing nothing right to create a better state, the politicians are transferring money to you.
No question. This is wealth redistribution in its purest form.
And is that because the Democratic Party in New York is just now that far to the left?
Yes. So where I represent, my district is far more, not only geographically, but culturally, politically, is far more similar to Ohio or Pennsylvania or parts of the Midwest. But most of the Democratic Party in New York State and those in elected office are from New York City and the New York City suburbs. And it's hard to explain, whether to my constituents or your listeners, just how far left the New York City Democratic Party has gone. But I guess all you would have to do is look at someone like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right? She comes out of the New York City, Queens, Bronx Democratic Party, the DSA. And the socialists down there, we have multiple members now in the Senate who've called for defunding the New York City Police Department. Not reimagining it, defunding it. You know, they wanted $7 billion in new taxes. They were unhappy with $4.3 billion. That didn't go far enough. I think the AOC election, the Bernie Sanders presidential election from 16, really has had a negative impact on the state, but it has had a significant impact on the Democratic Party down in New York City.
You have a huge budget. You're bigger than Texas and Florida combined in terms of your state budget?
That's correct. We have a $212 billion budget that's larger than the state budgets of Florida and Texas combined, and yet they have more population than we do. In fact, eventually, they're going to have more New Yorkers than we do.
So you have a very, very big budget financing very destructive projects. I noticed that the Fiscal Policy Institute estimated that under this new budget, 92,000 illegal immigrants would get a $15,600 payment because they'd lost income during the pandemic, and another 199,000 would get $3,200 in payment. And, you know, I do these TV shows and people say, gosh, you know, what's the root of illegal immigration? Why are they coming here? And I try to say to them, you know, if New York is offering 15 grand, you don't think people in El Salvador can figure this out? It's almost like they want to maximize the attractiveness of New York State for people who are here illegally.
Yes, I think when they look at what's happening at the border, they want those folks to come to New York specifically. Once they're here, they want them in New York City. This is a transfer of not only wealth or a redistribution, but it's a transfer of demographics. You know, they want people like my parents or my constituents who moved to Florida or Tennessee or North Carolina or Texas, whether it's for jobs or in their retirement years, good riddance. And we'll replace you with folks from El Salvador or Nicaragua or wherever. And that is viewed, I guess, as a net positive, whether it's just politics or there's some larger rationale behind that. But basically what you're doing in a lot of cases, let's just be honest, you're incentivizing folks who are coming here who are going to need more welfare. They're going to need more public tax dollars. That's why, even though as we lose population, almost 40% of New Yorkers are on some sort of public assistance. That's not a sustainable model. You know that as well as anybody. And yet we continue to double down on policies that will grow that percentage, not shrink it.
I noticed in this new fund that they put in the budget this year, they're actually going to provide something like four times as much money to an illegal immigrant as was provided for property tax relief, and more than 400 times what was allocated for life-saving treatment for those receiving mental health services and crucial veterans program. I don't understand why there isn't almost a rebellion underway by normal people watching their taxes go up and the money being transferred around to people who aren't even here legally.
Yeah, well, I can tell you in certain parts of the state, there certainly are. I can tell you that the Republican Party, we just had a meeting of almost every county chair here in Albany where multiple candidates came before these chairs to talk about running for statewide office. And here we are almost still 2 years away from the next election. So there is, I think, a feeling that this is going way too far. But I don't know if it's just people are tuning out things. I don't know if it's the fatigue from the pandemic. I don't know if it's because a lot of people are just saying, I'm leaving. I'm just giving up. But there needs to be a pushback from the people who live in this state. You know, if you are a law-abiding, tax-paying individual, whether you own a business or not, whether you are a veteran or not, whether you're the police officer, when you look at the policies coming out of Albany, the reason people are leaving, it's not because of the weather, it's because of the policies coming out of this state. That's what's driving people to other states. It's not a coincidence, it's a direct result of those policies. This budget doubles down on those policies. To your point, all you have to do is look at the priorities in this budget. The priority was to increase taxes. And where is that money going to go? A lot of folks will say, well, I'm not a billionaire. I'm not the one paying a lot of these taxes. They're going to be millionaires and billionaires. Okay. They're going to turn it around and spend it on people who are here who are not U.S. citizens. They're going to spend it to help criminals and, you know, invest more in programs so that less people are in jail. They're going to use it to reimagine police forces. I mean, we have a reimagining board in the city of Ithaca. This is really egregious. I know it's not connected to the budget, but it is a task force that the governor mandated to reimagine the police department in the city of Ithaca. The city of Ithaca defunded their police department. And on this board, they appointed a New York City convicted cop killer.
What? Repeat that.
So there's a board to reimagine what policing would be and public safety would be in the city of Ithaca. And appointed to the board by the mayor and the council is an individual, Richard Rivera, who was convicted in the 1980s of executing an off-duty New York City police officer during a robbery.
And what's their rationale for appointing him?
Hard to know, but I firmly believe, and I think it's important for your listeners to know, he was appointed because he was a cop killer. That's why he's on there. It's not like it's incidental to him being on there. You know, it's not like you're on this board and, oh, several years ago this thing happened. But for him killing a cop and going to jail for it, I can't imagine for a second that he would have ever been put on this board. I don't know what value he brings, but it's clear that it's not enough to talk about, you know, defunding police or reimagining. It's a hostility. They have a hostility to public safety, to those that wear the uniform, to those who pay taxes, to those who play by the rules. Anybody that upholds the United States of America as we know it and love it, they view as an obstacle or an enemy to their worldview.
Wow. I mean, I have to say that that's almost breathtaking. I think the average American has no idea how crazy the system has become. You recognize that the state's facing a real crisis, both in New York City, where crime is out of control, and where you may have had the worst mayor in the country, but also statewide, where between 2018 and 19, some 180,000 people left the state. New York and California are both contributing to a mass migration to states that don't have income taxes, for example. But you've also, because you've been a leader and you've been working on this, what sort of things do you think should have been done? If we'd had a rational, common sense, center-right legislature with a budget this size, what would you be doing?
Well, when you're given $12.6 billion from the federal government, now they said you can't use that, quote-unquote, for tax cuts. But as you know, money's fungible. So, okay, I'll take that $12.6 billion and invest that in things that we had, you know, infrastructure, mental health services, you know, use that to shore up our unemployment system, which was a total disaster early on in the pandemic. If you needed an unemployment check or to file for unemployment, you'd have had better luck filing in a different state. I mean, it was awful. So taking that money, investing that in the critical services that we expect government to provide in the 21st century, then you could also cut taxes. Cut taxes for our small business. Don't just spend a bunch of money on commercials saying New York's open for business. Actually cut taxes and lower regulations. And guess what? Businesses will figure out that you're open for business. Cut taxes for middle income, or for all New Yorkers. Make New York a more affordable place. Give the $10,200 tax break to law-abiding New Yorkers who collected unemployment last year. You know, you're on unemployment last year, the first 10-2 will match what the federal government's doing. You don't have to pay taxes on that. That would send a clear message that we actually care about working, law-abiding New Yorkers here in this state. But we didn't do that. That wasn't even talked about.
Correct me if I got this wrong, because the numbers are so weird, it's hard for an outsider like me to really believe it. That apparently your unemployment system last year spent more in the last year than the previous 30 years?
Yeah.
How is that possible?
There's probably several factors that contribute to that, but the biggest one is New York closed businesses and shut the state down and kept it shut down for far longer than many other states did, if not every other state, maybe save for California or Michigan. And when you do that, every restaurant, every hospitality business, they laid people off. They said, well, I don't know when I'm going to open up again, so I got to lay people off. So you had just an influx of folks filing for unemployment, people who never normally would file. We also made more people eligible for unemployment, even in professions that normally they're not eligible because we were saying you can't go to work. For me, Mr. Speaker, it was always real simple in this pandemic. There were two different types of states. There were states that said, what is the least restrictive we need to be while keeping people safe? Then there were states that said, what is the most restrictive we can be without completely crashing the economy? We were the latter. We tried to be as most restrictive as we could be while still allowing some level of commerce, whatever the minimum was. We should have been operating from the other mindset, that freedom is the goal, that liberty and economic freedom and mobility, that should be the goal. What is the least restrictive we need to be on folks while keeping people safe? We did not do that. And so when you do it the other way, when you say you can't go to work, you can't open your business, well, then we have an obligation to provide funding so that you're able to eat. And that was why the unemployment system, which was so outdated, they didn't even have the technology to be able to let people file claims. The system kept crashing. You couldn't get a hold of somebody. It was awful. And to add insult to injury, we had calls in my office from constituents who were in Democratic Senate districts, Brooklyn, Syracuse. They were calling my office because they couldn't get a hold of their representatives. So these folks have been absent from this entire pandemic, and your listeners should know this too. We've allowed Governor Cuomo, the majorities in both houses have allowed the governor to run the state by executive order the entire time. The Democrats, they have a supermajority, and they've used it to do nothing except watch the governor continue to keep the state locked down, to make all these decisions by the stroke of his pen, even still as he is engulfed in multiple investigations of sexual misconduct, sexual assault, sexual harassment, lying to people about 15,000 folks dying in nursing homes. And yet we continue to sit by. They are not interested in governing. They're interested in activism. These are all activists, people who came from community activism, who push these radical ideas. They have no interest in being a representative, which you know something about, I know something about. They are not interested in that. They are interested in being activists and getting paid to do it. That's it.
Even with everything you just described, as I understand it, the governor made a series of decisions which may have killed between 9 and 12,000 senior citizens.
That's right.
And yet, he got, an Emmy for his book? The degree to which the New York media propped him up was astonishing. And I think he still has fairly decent ratings in the state. I mean, I wouldn't automatically say he couldn't get reelected, assuming he's not in jail.
Yeah, correct. Well, you know, they give Emmys to actors, and we know that he was a great actor. It was really fiction when you think about the book that he wrote. All of that we now know. He profited to the tune of $4 million on that book deal at the same time that he was shutting the state down, at the same time that people were losing their lives and livelihoods, all as a result of his lack of action in the beginning and then his heavy-handed dictatorial action as we went along. And he lied about, you know, people say, well, what does it matter where somebody died? Well, when you're fighting a new virus and you're trying to track the epidemiology of it and how it spreads, where someone contracts a virus and where they die actually is a big part of that, right? That's a critical piece to this. And we know that the reason he lied, to me, is very clear. He lied about the numbers. He doctored a report that was issued to the public. And he did that so that he could get that $4 million book deal, so that he could profit at a time when New Yorkers were, again, losing their lives and livelihoods. That is old-fashioned corruption.
That's just an astonishing level of corruption. Just amazing. So let me ask you one last question. We talked about how weird the Democratic Party is and how challenging the structure of the government is right now. I mean, are you an optimist that New Yorkers will ultimately get their act together and take power back from this radical machine?
I am. You know, as a Republican in New York and as a Buffalo Bills fan, I'm always an eternal optimist, right? So I have no other option. But I am an optimist. I firmly believe that people at the end of the day, regardless of your party, your background, most Americans and New Yorkers, they're always going to choose freedom over oppression. They're always going to choose opportunity over a handout or the lack of opportunity. And people want to be safe. Crime always polls badly. All the things that you see go on are things that I think, no matter what your party is, you would be against. You would want to see a change. So, you know, the Republican Party in New York is going to have to make a case that we are the party of sanity, fiscal sanity, public safety sanity. We're the party that wants to give every New Yorker an opportunity. And we're the party that's focused on changing those out-migration patterns, because that's the single biggest threat to the state of New York, that we are continually losing capital, both fiscal capital, human capital. We're losing employees, we're losing employers. And if we don't change that simple trend, then New York State will go the way of the dodo bird, so to speak. So I am an optimist, but it's up to us, as you know, to carry that message and make sure that people understand they do have a choice, that this is not the only future, that this is not the only option, that there is an attractive option on the other side.
Well, we're going to put contact information both for you and for the state GOP on our show page. And I think that people are fascinated, and I hope maybe when we get through the next legislative session, we might chat again, because you are right in the middle of one of the most interesting examples of a corrupt, radical, incompetent, and amazingly destructive machine. And I think your reports are very, very helpful. I really appreciate your taking the time to brief us and bring us up to speed.
I thank you for having me. Great to hear from you. And I look forward to coming on your show anytime you want. Thank you very much.
Newt's World is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Debbie Myers. Our producer is Garnsey Sloan. And our researcher is Rachel Peterson. The artwork for this show was created by Steve Penley. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. If you've been enjoying Newt's World, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcast and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. Right now, listeners of Newt's World can sign up for my 3 free weekly columns at gingrich360.com/newsletter. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World.